What a journey it's been for the Queens Gaels thus far. They've overcome injuries, beaten top teams, and set new standards for individual excellence. But a new journey is about to unfold. And it begins in Windsor on Saturday, October 26th. Gaels Lancers 2. A regular season rematch with everything at stake. Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM at 2:45 p.m. for the Something in the Water pregame show ahead of the 3 p.m. kickoff. This is a game neither team can afford to lose, and one you can't afford to miss.
Good morning, it is 11 a.m. and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. After 16 years of serving the Kingston community, Loving Spoonful has announced it will cease operations due to ongoing funding challenges. Loving Spoonful is a nonprofit dedicated to addressing food insecurity, encouraging sustainability, and supporting local food producers in Kingston. Loving Spoonful began as a volunteer-driven food collection and redistribution initiative. Over the years, it expanded into various essential programs, including the Grow Project in over 20 elementary schools, numerous community kitchens programs, the Kingston Community Gardens Network, the Local Food Access Pay What You Can Community Harvest Gardens, the Community Training Farm, and the Community Harvest Gardens. The board of Loving Spoonful undertook a thorough review of its operations before reaching the difficult decision to wind down, citing the current economic climate as the reason and noting that this is a significant hurdle for many charities across Canada. Discussions are already underway about how to carry forward the organization's mission as Loving Spoonful finishes out their current agreements before closing their doors for good. I sat down with Loving Spoonful's treasurer, Judy Peterson, to discuss the announcement. Loving Spoonful is closing down due to lack of funding. How did you come to this decision, and how long has this been a conversation within the organization?
Well, it's been a conversation pretty much this calendar year, mostly. Certainly as we came into the calendar year, we started to get some senses about approval for grant funding, and the amount of donations and that we were getting was trending down. So we started to do a bit of research in that regard, particularly with organizations like Canada Helps. They do this big Canada Giving Report, which has got some really helpful stats. But we also communicated with a number of like organizations and colleagues or people like that in Kingston. And we're getting concerned that there might be some issues. And then as we moved into, I guess, in the springtime, a number of the funds that we had applied for, we didn't get. And so this started to cause some concerns. And we were basically getting kind of a standard response in terms of more people are asking for more money. There's only so much to go around, to put it very simply. So we started to look of where we were at and realized that we only had so much runway in terms of making sure that we could continue to meet obligations like payroll and getting the work done with the funders that we all, agreements that we already had. So that is when we started to look at how we could make sure kind of three primary things. We wanted to try to preserve as much as we could of the Loving Spoonful programs. We wanted to make sure we were in a position to give staff as much notice as possible. And at the same time, be in a position to complete agreement deliverables that were already on the plate. So that's how we kind of came to the position that we announced on the website a week or two.
Yeah, and you mentioned there the future of some of these programs. Is there a future for the many programs Loving Spoonful is involved in, or are you sort of just finishing out with the current funding that you have?
Well, what we did was we thought out like-minded organization in the community that could potentially have a mutual benefit to move some of these programs to, and that's what we're currently in negotiations with another organization to do that.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's very hopeful that maybe some of these programs will live on beyond Loving Spoonful. And you did mention you've been talking with other organizations. Do you worry that this is a trend that other organizations might also cease operations due to funding issues?
Certainly, that's kind of the sense that we were getting back, is mm-hmm. that the whole sort of economic landscape is presenting funding challenges for many charities. Locally, nationally, in the province, and everywhere. And we're getting that from other charities and other organizations that are reaching out to get funding from other places.
The organization is continuing to finish out with the current funding you have and pass off current programs. How long until Loving Spoonful's doors officially close?
Well, we're hoping to it's March of 2025, is we have obligations until that point in time. Mm-hmm. We're still with certain funders, and we're looking to hopefully do any transitioning of anything within that time frame.
Okay, yeah, for sure. And how are the staff handling it right now?
Well, I'm on the board, and the staff are, it's been very difficult for them. They have been just a remarkably dedicated group of people, and they've put a lot of their, you know, heart and soul and passion into these programs. So they're finding it really, really difficult to make this change.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to just shout out that they've done a tremendous job in terms of getting them to where they're at today. And the outpouring that we've received from many people in Kingston and outside of Kingston in terms of the amount of value they have found from these programs has been great. And so that helps a bit to hear that, but it is but very hard for them. But they're also doing their best to help us preserve the legacy as much as we can.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you have any final comments on this news and what it means for Kingston and the Loving Spoonful community?
Well, I'll just reiterate that we're grateful to the community for how much appreciation that they have had to say about it. And we're really hoping that for the staff, especially, that we can come up with the best outcome possible for them.
Once again, that was Judy Peterson with Loving Spoonful on the recent news of the organization's decision to close down. The Kingston School of Art has announced the introduction of student memberships aimed at providing valuable resources and opportunities for aspiring artists. This initiative also comes at a crucial time as students in Kingston no longer have access to the Queen's Bachelor of Fine Arts program, offering them a chance to engage with the vibrant local art community. To learn more about this initiative, we caught up with the director of Kingston School of Art, Victoria Smythe, to discuss the impact of student memberships and the future of art education in Kingston. Stay tuned for our interview where we delve into the vision behind this exciting new program and its potential to enrich the local art scene.
How did this kind of come about? What's the story there? So it's actually part of our membership program. We introduced our memberships about a year or so ago. So it's the whole thing in general is just a very new thing. And our memberships basically allow people to have a little bit of an inside access to KSOA. And it's been slowly building up. Basically, our regular membership includes 10% off classes. They get to participate in a yearly member show. We usually send out newsletters and special like insider things, or like coming up next week, because we have our juried exhibition this month. Friday night, we have our members only sneak peek of the show. So different things like that. And we kind of really realized that as we were growing our general membership, that there was kind of a need to introduce a student aspect of it, because our membership is not expensive. I want to say by any means, it's $30 for the entire year. It gets you all the perks that I just told you. But for a student, that's still a fair bit of money. And we wanted to really give Queen's students access, the same access that we do our general membership, but at a slightly lower rate that maybe is a little bit more accessible for them. Especially if, say, you're an art history major who really likes taking the fine art courses, but because you're not a fine art student, you don't have that same access that they used to the studios to be able to take advantage of that. Whereas now, if you get our student membership for $20 for the entire year, you can get 10% off classes, or you can actually join our members show and be able to show off the art that you're making in your spare time, or come for some of our sneak peeks, or occasionally we may, I'm hoping to start doing artist talks, so you can actually talk with somebody who's in the profession or the artist profession.
Awesome. Yeah. And I was wondering if you could get into that piece of why students? What made you think, okay, we really need to expand on this demographic?
Well, KSOA is really close to campus. We have a lot of students that do come in either as our like summertime staff. We have a couple of Queen's students who work on our weekend staff. We have a couple who are our artist instructors. We have a few who volunteer with us. And I recently also had a practicum student who came in for an interview who, like I kind of used his example, she's an art history major, but she really loves art. And so she wanted to do her practicum here because she wasn't able to get her like art in her curriculum at school because the fine arts program has been put on pause. And it really made me think about, well, how can we help those students be able to get the art that they want that they can't now access? Because I went to school for art. I know what it's like to love art and not be able to get into a studio or not be able to have the access that I want. And we want to be able to help those students. And especially because we are so close, I don't know what the walking time is, but we're like a 5-minute drive from Queen's campus. So we're very accessible. And yeah, we just really wanted to expand that because we do have students who come here on a regular basis as it is. And why not make it more accessible for them?
Yeah, absolutely. I was wondering if you could expand upon that piece of, you know, filling that gap that we've been left now that the Queen's Fine Arts program is on pause for 2 years.
Yeah. It's so sad. I remember hearing it and thinking what a shame it was, because it really takes away, or it really shows that art isn't thought of as being important, which I think is really a shame, and not being able to give even the students coming in an opportunity to take it as a minor or have those extra courses. It's just a really big shame. And as an organization in the community that preaches that art is important and that everybody should have access to art, we want to help fill that void to make sure that our mandate is being filled and to be able to fill in all the aspects that people are now being deprived of and the students are being deprived of because the program is being put on pause and they're not being given the opportunities that they otherwise would have. We want to give them those opportunities in whatever small way that we can through the student memberships.
Yeah, absolutely. And how can folks get involved? How can they access these student memberships?
So basically for student membership, you just have to come into our main office in the Window Art Gallery, which is on Victoria Street, so Princess and Victoria. And all you have to do is show a valid piece of student ID, and staff will help you purchase your membership once we see the ID. It's $20 for the entire year, and that gets you, like I said, 10% off any classes and workshops. You get to participate in our annual members show free of extra charge. You get sneak peeks. You get invited to special events. Some of the other things. Technically, you also get voting rights at our annual general meeting. So all you have to do is come into our office and show valid student ID, and we can get you all set up.
Once again, that was Victoria Smythe, director of the Kingston School of Art, on their new student membership program. Be sure to tune in to CFRC's news programming in the coming weeks for coverage of their annual juried exhibition, which opened this past weekend, and visit the Window Gallery at 647A Princess Street yourself to check out this year's works. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today. Starting off with your weather report for today, we're expecting sunny skies with fog patches dissipating this morning. We have a high of 16 degrees and a UV index of 4 or moderate. Tonight, we're expecting clear skies with fog patches developing after midnight and a low of +2. Looking forward to tomorrow, Saturday, October 19th, we're expecting a mix of sun and cloud clearing near noon. Fog patches will be dissipating in the morning and we have a high of 17 degrees with a UV index of 4 or moderate. Saturday night, we'll have clear skies and a low of +5. Finishing off the weekend on Sunday, October 20th, we're going to have sunny skies with a high of 18, and Sunday night, clear skies with a low of 10. Now for your CFRC traffic report for this morning. In road closures to look out for, Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert, closed until December 31st for construction activity. Berry Street at Stewart will be closed until 7 p.m. tonight for road reconstruction. Charles Street, Bagot to Montreal, closed until October 25th to accommodate new utilities installation. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. For more project details, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th, closed until October 31st for buried infrastructure replacement. The road will be open to local traffic. Kings Court Avenue, Hillcrest to Kirkpatrick, closed until November 15th to accommodate a water main replacement. Union Street, Willingdon to Albert, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. For more details, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. And finally, University Avenue, Union to Earl, closed for construction activity at the Queen's JDUC. In parking disruptions, the Hanson Memorial Parking Restoration Project is underway and is expected to conclude in July 2025. Be advised that the garage is closed until October 20th for work being done around the drive lane entrance. The work will be completed in phases to allow the building to remain open to public parking for the duration of the project. Between October 20th and up to November 30th, 47 parking spaces will be available on the ground level only. Beyond that, it is anticipated that no more than 50% of the available 271 parking spaces will be closed at any time. There is also parking availability at the Chown Memorial and Robert Bruce Memorial parking garages in the two adjacent blocks to the west. In other delays to look out for, Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen Street for a contractor to complete sewer and road reconstruction. Bay Ridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd, expect delays while a contractor completes phase 2 of the Bay Ridge Drive active transportation upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles, Edwin to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes phase 2 of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford. Expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Motorists are advised to seek alternative routes. Highway 2, Abidon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abidon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Finally, Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard at Elmwood. Expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard. Including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roads, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road. For details on any of these projects, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. That wraps up your weather and traffic report for this morning, and now back to more local news. Artists and curators are returning to the site of performance art series Talkin' Back to Johnny Mac after nearly 10 years to put on a second exhibition. Talkin' Back to Johnny Mac 2 is a series of performances set in City Park, revisiting the site of the former Sir John A. McDonald statue, which was taken down in 2021 after local activists called for its removal and Kingston City Council ultimately agreed. The first iteration took place in 2015, when the statue still stood in City Park. Despite being spread across the country 9 years later and the statue being taken down, the original curators and artists are reuniting in Kingston to reignite the conversation surrounding historical monuments. The project has gathered a dynamic group of artists, including original contributors David Garneau, Leah Dechter, and Peter Morin, alongside newcomer Jimmy Kilpatrick, to engage the Kingston community in reflection and discussion through performance art. The exhibition will include performances ranging from spoken word poetry to karaoke, and the week will finish off with a lecture in Stauffer Library. Talkin' Back to Johnny Mac 2 is also being presented in partnership with the Agnes Etherington Arts Center at Queen's University. I sat down with curators Dr. Aaron Sutherland and Dr. Sebastian DeLine to discuss the return of Talkin' Back to Johnny Mac, running next week from October 21st to 25th in City Park. To start us off, I was wondering if you'd like to introduce yourself and give a bit of background on your work.
So my name's Aaron Sutherland, and I'm an independent curator and associate professor in the Department of Art and Design at the University of Alberta. I have lots of ums and ahs. I curated the first iteration of Talking Back to Johnny Mac when I was a PhD student at Queen's in 2015. And I'm looking forward to kind of bringing the conversation up again.
And hello, everyone. My name is Sebastian DeLine. I'm the Associate Curator of Care and Relations at the Agnes Etherington Arts Center on campus. So I am Aaron's co-conspirator and coordinating curator on the ground. And it's a pleasure to speak to you all today.
Awesome. And it's been 9 years since the first iteration of this project. What sparked the idea to bring it back? What's the story there? And Aaron, what brought you back on board now that you're based in Alberta?
That's a good question. I think that a lot of things have happened in Kingston since the original performance series. Specifically, the statue has been taken down of Johnny McDonald. And I was really interested in just revisiting the conversation. So many people have been involved in this conversation beyond and outside of the performance. My performance series is just one small kind of drop in the bucket of the conversations that went on and have continued to go on about the legacy of Johnny McDonald and the statue in Kingston. And I wanted to kind of just revisit it and see where the performance artists are now in their relationship to the statue and to Johnny McDonald and to their performances that they did 9 years ago. I think that the conversation around toppling monuments has really changed since the original conversation, and more monuments have come down. And also the conversation about counter monuments has really kind of ramped up, or maybe not even ramped up, just changed. And so we've been, as communities, been looking into the legacies of these monuments and the legacies of these colonial kind of people that we've in some cases iconicized or heroicized. And I wanted to just continue that conversation that was started 9 years ago.
Yeah. And Sebastian, did you have anything in on those beginnings, sparking the idea to bring it back?
And I'm curious to think about how the artists will respond, you know, in thinking about few charities. In my mind, I often think about things not so much only as what has happened in the past, but where are we going forward from here? So I think it's a pretty exciting opportunity now to revisit the relationship to place and the relationship to the land and to this urban land environment, and thinking about that from an artist's perspective on where they envision that going forward. So I'm really excited to see what they come up with.
Yeah, and it's not just the curators coming back, it's also the performers coming back. Do you have all the original performers from 9 years ago?
Not all of them. I have three of them, mm-hmm. And then a new artist. So Leah Dechter is back, Pierre Morin and David Garneau. And then we also have a new artist, Jimmy Kilpatrick, coming.
You were saying it's sort of a mystery to you what these artists are going to do. So are you kind of waiting in suspense?
Well, I know a little bit about what they're going to do. as a curator, I definitely know what they're going to do in general, but performance artists also kind of feel the audience out and respond to the moment. And so they could, you know, alter their performances in the moment. And I'm just, you know, I think what Sebastian said about futurities is really important. It's not necessarily like reflecting on what's happened, although that's part of it, but also looking forward to the future. Like, I really liked how you said that, Sebastian, because I think that's really where we're at, is how to move forward in time and think through these things. So yeah, I do have a general idea about what they're going to do, and I think, but it's nice for audience members to be surprised. But we've got you know, like a karaoke a party coming, and as part of a performance, we've got spoken word, we've got kind of like an installation style performance, and you know, I'm a scholar of performance art, and we've got lots of different kinds of performance art coming.
And the statue was removed in 2021. You guys were talking about looking towards the future. I was wondering, why return to the site as opposed to, you know, moving on to another monument? Or, you know, what's the importance of reigniting this conversation at this specific site in Kingston?
Well, one of the conversations that Aaron and I were having leading up to the second iteration and revisiting the site is some of the activities that happen now. And one of the things I was sharing with Aaron is that it's interesting is when the monument was removed, they actually still, the basin on which the monument was placed is still present. And it's actually become a kind of a site where community gathers on a regular basis. You'll see vigils there. You'll see community activists coming and using it as a kind of a platform or a soapbox in which to convey their own messages, you know, and take up that agency themselves. And I think that that's a very, you know, interesting transformation that's happened to that place, that it still has that kind of activity, only it's transformed into this one, you know, solitary figure of history, of a particular kind of Canadian history, into a place where that's a lived, existing history in which everyday people can also take up that space. I don't know, Aaron, what do you think?
I love that. I love that it's being used. I moved away from Kingston, so I don't know exactly how community is using it. And I feel really honored to come back and be part of this kind of movement to using this space for community and for conversation. I completely agree, Sebastian. In Pierre Morin's original performance, he repurposed the statue into kind of like a pirate broadcast station to speak Indigenous knowledges across Turtle Island. And the, you know, the colonial monument only tells one version of history, and it really speaks to a very specific notion of who John A. Macdonald was. And I think with taking it down, And now providing a space for, like Sebastian said, living histories and living communities to have various conversations. It just really opens up the space. And there's lots of different kinds of conversations that can be had there. And so I just kind of want to add a voice to the already amazing conversations going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most folks, especially in Kingston, know what you're talking about when you refer to these conversations. I was wondering if you could get a bit more into detail about what this conversation is, as well as what folks might be able to take away from the performances coming up in October.
I think that there'll be lots of different kinds of conversations going on because it's different people. From my perspective, I'm looking to think through the process of why we have monuments, what monuments have been created, what monuments have been taken down, and then also how people respond to these monuments. And sometimes the monuments are invisible, you know, and they're like historical remembrances that or narratives that get retold. And I'm looking to create alternative or space for alternative narratives.
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of circling back, so we were talking about, you know, why come back to the original site, and you were saying how the space is used today and how fantastic that is. But why not go to Bellevue House? Why not go to one of the buildings named after Sir John A. Macdonald, Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard? Why return to this site?
That's such a good question. I think it's because of the place of the kind of plinth that's there, it and where it sits. You know, it's kind of that this the corner of this intersection. You can kind of walk towards it or come across it, but also it has basically a stage built for us. You know, that we can take up space. So I do totally understand your question. And I think that maybe future iterations of performances about this kind of these narratives could happen. But for right now, I think coming back to the same site, brings up the original show, and then also uses the space that is already being used to have conversations, but then also looks forward to the future. Like what do we do from here?
I could add to that if I can.
Yeah, please do.
Thinking about what Aaron is saying is an interesting proposition. Instead of always necessarily changing a location, sometimes it's an interesting way to revisit and change a changing context of a place and time. You know, so the proposition of being able to arrive a decade later in the same place is going to have a different context and a different different political space of gathering in time and place than we are right now. And it's in this moment where those conversations also then carry on from 10 years ago, but then into where we are now. And I think that that's a very special kind of proposition in terms of the history of performance art too. I don't know, you know, Aaron, you know more about that subject matter than I do, but I would endeavor to say that there are fewer performance art pieces that actually have a durational kind of revisiting component as well, like that, and also in the changing of a context of a relationship to a particular place.
I really appreciate that you bring up the idea of relationships, because it's so key to my understanding of my curatorial process, is this building relationships. So I like to work with the same people, you know, over and over and over again. And it makes sense to me to work in the same site too. And I've worked with the Agnes. This will be my second time working with the Agnes. And I really love that I'm building these relationships, and that we come back, and it's not just, you know, one time event. We have long-term working relationships that build into friendships and things like that. So I, like Sebastian and I, have built a friendship like through our process of curating the show. And I just really value those relationships. And I think I have a relationship to this site, having walked past it for, you know, about 7 years while I was at Queens, and while the statue was there, and then and I have this relationship to the statue, and I'm, you know, looking forward to just spending time again with the site.
You know, what's interesting about that site too, is that even before Johnny McDonald was born, you know, that place was also a place between, very close by to a Mississauga village. And it was, so within a few hundred meters nearby, there was already the place of a village site of Indigenous presences here in Kingston. And Kingston already has had a long history and presence with Wendat, Haudenosaunee, and Anishinaabe peoples. And so that site already is a place of gathering long before, and even during different iterations of decades. You know, I did some interesting local research reading into how I believe it was Kingston-based artist Marnie McDermott did research on City Park. I think it was maybe in the, I want to say the 1970s, was also a space of queer gathering. And it was, if you can imagine, if people can envision City Park, it was a lot more densely inhabited with trees at the time. It was almost more like a forest. And through that, those relationship of that being like a queer cruising ground, basically, it was actually, a lot of the trees were kind of sort of timely cut down in a way, and it more so over the relationship to that place transformed into becoming what it is today, which is a lot more, I would say, manicured and kind of sterilized. And so it's had all these different histories of peoples being in that place and time, which make it quite an interesting space to converge. So rather than only responding necessarily to, it's, so to me, it's not only about responding to John A. McDonald, but it's about also saying, okay, yes, John A. McDonald has this very big stamp on Kingston in a way, but also who else is here? Who else was here? And who else is in relation? And I think that that's what the works that Aaron brings to us invoke, and what makes that place such a great space of convergence to have those kind of conversations with these artists.
Yeah, you were saying how you've been building working relationships with all these folks who are involved in this project and that you met 9 or 10 years ago, maybe more. How has it been kind of coming back together to work on this?
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. I'm lucky enough to call all of the artists friends. And I, as a result of working together, and we've continued to have these conversations throughout these 9 years. But now we're kind of bringing together and creating something again. And many of these artists have worked together throughout these 9 years and before that, and so these conversations are ongoing in this community, so I think, speaking for them, I think that they're really excited. We've had lots of good conversations. We meet on Zoom and chat about the show and about what they want to do and what they need and for the show and everything, and I think they're really excited to come back and to just spend time in the space again, spend time with each other.
Yeah, definitely like a full circle moment. And again, it is really interesting how, despite the fact that you've spread all across the country, you come back to this monument and this conversation to reignite it, as opposed to, you know, just moving on to something new that might be closer for you or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that. Kingston is really important to me. And I met so many amazing people while I was there. And I've been lucky enough to maintain many of those relationships and build new relationships. And I want to just honor those relationships. And that's a big part of the curatorial project as well, is coming back to a place that really means a lot to me.
Yeah, for sure. And I was also going to ask, this new tie-in with the university, with Sebastian being at the Agnes, how did that kind of come to be? And also, I was wondering if you could just speak to the importance of having that tie-in with the Agnes now.
Well, as Aaron was saying, Aaron's already had an existing relationship with Agnes. So we love that when Aaron approached us in bringing this second iteration of the project, we were very excited to work with her. It's just such a privilege to be able to work with an artist and a scholar and a curator that really presses certain issues forward. And I think that the work that Erin does is just so inspiring in that way, in moving conversations forward. It's kind of a no-brainer, you know, to want to jump at the chance to work with her again. So I'm super happy that she can make time and to come all the way out here from Alberta and invite this really incredible group of artists to come here. And more than one of whom have also relationships to Kingston and Queens as alumni. You know, Erin Dechter as well is also an artist and a professor at NSCAD and was also an alumna of Queens. And so I think it's really great when our community here in Kingston also, you know, has a significant relationship to this place, and then, you know, come back and revisits it and continues to put that kind of good energy into the community here, I think is just wonderful.
And yeah, especially while the Agnes is also not in a physical space right now, it's really exciting to have an event like this tied to the Agnes.
That's so true. Keep your eyes out because we're going to be having a lot more offsite works. And in a way, I think it's always really exciting to not necessarily be tied to a place. You know, it really opens up your relationship to being in the community in a different way. So, people just keep your eyes peeled because Agnes is going to be motoring around all over the place.
Awesome stuff. And how can folks attend these performances and learn more about the exhibition coming up?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways that people can. If they want to actually register, they could go on the Agnes Etherington Art Center's website, and then you'll see the full program of the performances and the dates, and they can register on there. But, you know, it's a free event. People can also just drop in. I think that's safe to say, right, Erin? Like, it's a city park, so it's, you know, the corner of King Street East and West Street, so which was, I think it's the southeast corner of the park. So just take a look on the website of the different times and dates, as I said earlier, and then just drop on by. And can't wait to see you there. And for those folks who might want to partake in a little bit of decolonial karaoke, yeah, like drink some water and some tea and get your voices ready, because let's do this.
Absolutely. Yes. And definitely just stop by. I think the one that you have to register is the talk in the Stauffer reading room. But otherwise, there's lots of space. Bring chairs if you need. I think we'll have a few there. But if you do need a chair, please bring a chair and come and hang out and see some performance art and engage in some performance art. You can. It's really an interesting four performances in that. Three performances, sorry. there's different styles of performance art, and one of which, in particular, the karaoke, you can really participate in it. So think about what songs you might want to sing that can end colonization. These are really great. And you can look up the artists as well. So on the Agnes website, they've got the artists listed, and you can look them up and do a little bit of research about what their practices are and be ready.
Once again, that was the curators of Talking Back to Johnny Mac 2, Dr. Erin Sutherland and Dr. Sebastian DeLine. You can catch performances running from October 21st to 25th in City Park at the site of the former statue. All events are free and open to the public. For more information, visit the Agnes Etherington Arts Center's website at agnes.queensu.ca. Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. Be sure to check out our concerts and events calendars at cfrc.ca for the full scoop. To start us off today on Friday, October 18th, Queen's University and CFRC are welcoming back alumni to campus for the weekend. Visit CFRC, Queen's Archives, and the Queen's Alumni Review and pick up your Gales football tickets from noon till 6 in Grant Hall. And stop by CFRC in Crothers Hall for our open house. The YMCA will also host its weekly fresh food market until 12:30 today, a great opportunity to get fresh food at great prices. Also tonight, Pumpkinferno at Kingston Penn launches, running various days through the end of October. Check out amazing hand-carved pumpkin exhibits for the family. Admission is $16 to $21. On Saturday, October 19th, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 to 4 p.m. in Springer Market Square. Also on Saturday, Queens Gaels take on the Waterloo Warriors during the annual homecoming game at Richardson Stadium. Kickoff is at 1 p.m. You can also join us live on CFRC 101.9 FM and streaming at CFRC.ca to catch live coverage by our very own Jesse Bell and crew. Also on Saturday, Queen's doctoral candidate Parisa Nozari will do a talk on From Dust to Grains to Stars and Shots at the Dark in Ellis Hall starting at 7:30 p.m., a free event that also features an observatory tour and opportunity to look at the sky using the observatory telescopes, weather permitting. On Sunday, October 20th, get up early and head over to Runner's Choice for an early morning long run starting at 8:30 a.m. Folks and families can also head over to Fort Henry on Sunday and multiple dates through the end of October for Fort Fright to check out the Ghouls and Goblins, special effects, and sound and amazing actors starting at 7:15 to 11 p.m. Admission is $25. And finally, finishing off the weekend, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 to 2 p.m., featuring food, artisanal crafts, and music. As for concerts this weekend, tonight KPP and CFRC present The Wilderness with the Astros at the Broom Factory. The show starts at 7:30 and tickets are $25. Also tonight, Happy Hour with Ali Pester takes place at the RCHA for free from 4 to 6 p.m. Stick around for some great rock and R&B by Southern Ale, a $5 show starting at 8 p.m. Also tonight, the Royal Tavern is hosting Sonia Bergen from 5 to 7 p.m. and No Limits from 9 to midnight. Two free music shows to enjoy. Jeff Dunn will play for free at the Toucan starting at 5 p.m. tonight, followed by another big show called Bags featuring Bag Money, Wave Generators, Eye Alive, Dan Doesn't Sleep, and Dupal. A big show starting at 10:30 p.m. On Saturday, October 19th, KPP Concerts and CFRC present Feral Minx and Luscious with special guests, Pound Salt at the Broom Factory starting at 7:30 p.m. Also tomorrow, enjoy Women in Jazz, a Limestone Jazz Collective showcase featuring Savannah Shea, Jasmine Wubadich, and Atiari for free at the RCHA starting at 8 p.m. Also on Saturday, Daft Brewing hosts Rock the House for Habitat for Humanity, featuring the Garvin Brothers and Retrofits. Tickets are $30 and the show starts at 8. Anthea Fever's album release show for her debut album, Summer's Morning, will take place at Next Church with opener Alexander Gallant. Tickets are $15 and the show starts at 7:30. Finally, on Sunday, October 20th, head over to Hotel Wolf Island for Sunday Jazz with Standards at 7. Buy donation show starting at 4 p.m. Also on Sunday, Chantel Thompson hits the stage at the RCHA Sunday night for free starting at 4:30 p.m. Have an event or concert you'd like to add to our online or on-air calendar? Reach out today via CFRC.ca. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go or hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
On Saturday, November 30th, the Independent Wrestling Academy, in cooperation with CFRC 101.9 FM, presents IWA Wrestling School of Rock. A portion of the proceeds from this family-friendly professional wrestling event will be donated directly to CFRC's annual funding drive. Tickets are available for $20 and can be bought through iwacanada.ca. The event is scheduled to take place at the Upper Hall of the Spire on 82 Sydenham Street. Doors at 5 p.m., opening bell will be at 5:30. Be sure to check out cfrc.ca and iwacanada.ca for additional event details. We hope to see you there, and we hope you're ready to rock the Spire.
And now it's time for this week's Release Radar right here on CFRC 101.9 FM in partnership with the City of Kingston and the Kingston Music Office. And today we're featuring Pound Salt's new single Stadium, released on October 11th. Stadium is a high-energy rock anthem that really captures Kingston, Ontario. With its fiery vocals and driving beat, the song looks back at some major local events that brought the community together. And it's all about celebrating the city's vibe and the people who make it special. The powerful sound just makes you want to sing along. Check out at Pound Salt Music on Instagram and stream Stadium now. Want to get your new release highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form through the Kingston Music Office website or via Instagram at visitkingston.music. And now let's enjoy Stadium by Pound Salt right here on CFRC.
It is 12 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up next is Democracy Now! Views expressed in this syndicated program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of CFRC 101.9 FM, Radio Queen's University.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! This is CFRC 101.9 FM, www.cfrc.ca. Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario.
KPP Concerts and CFRC 101.9 FM present a stacked lineup of shows this November at the Broom Factory, featuring some of your favorite big-name acts and a few local gems. On November 1st, check out Canadian indie legend Destroyer live at Broom Factory with Fortunato, Duretti,